Good Saturday morning. It's Mike Mullins, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show with you here on AM 950. And today we're going to talk about natural gas. I mean, a lot of people may say, so what is the deal with natural gas as a socially responsible investment? You know, aren't we kind of like against things that are petroleum products? I mean, this is like, ooh, do we need to talk about this stuff? Well, actually, we do, because you may have noticed that our economy runs on fossil fuels. And as much conversation there as there is about a resource that can't be replaced, such as petroleum, once it's out of the ground, it's out of the ground. What's the deal with it? How can it be a socially responsible investment? Today, our guest is Dan Smith, a CFA. He is a vice president and portfolio analyst for RBC Wealth Management, which, by the way, if you've been listening to the show, you know that I am a financial consultant with RBC Wealth Management in Minneapolis. And Dan and I have been talking about natural gas off and on for a while and thought this would be a suitable time to talk about natural gas. How are you today, Dan?
Good. How are you doing, Mike?
Doing okay. Thanks for asking. You know, natural gas and socially responsible investing, in my view, go together this way. I talk about socially responsible investing as having kind of three component-y pieces to it. The first one is responsible investing, and I'll define that later on, but responsible investing really kind of encompasses the original socially responsible investing kind of mantras about things you don't invest in. You stay away from gambling stocks, you stay away from tobacco stocks, you stay away from alcohol stocks, and you stay away from nuclear. Back in the day of South Africa, you stayed away from companies engaged in working with the South African government because of apartheid. That's a long time ago, and many people listening have no idea what I'm talking about, but believe me, it was a big deal 40 years ago. And petroleum products, as being a commodity that we can't get more of, it's not a renewable resource, would seem to not be something for us to talk about in this area, but it really is. Sustainable is the second area. Sustainable companies are ones that have values that are reflected in their business plan, and they tend to be more environmentally sensitive to their water use and energy use and that kind of thing. And then there's the green area. So it's responsible, sustainable, and green. And green has more to do with doing better with what we have, finding alternatives such as wind and solar to other kinds of fossil fuels such as coal and gas and oil. However, you know, this is not something we can just snap our fingers and all of a sudden we're going to have these things replaced in the next 2 or 3 years. It's going to take a long, long time to develop the resources, because we have a gigantic economy and fossil fuels run this economy. So how do we do better for now with what we have? And that's why we're going to talk about natural gas today. Are you still there, Dan?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going on and on. Let's start off and let me ask you this. What are the benefits of natural gas?
When you relate it to coal and oil, one thing is that it burns cleaner, a lot less in the way of pollutants for most grades of natural gas versus oil. The other main thing is it produces a lot less CO2 than oil and coal do. Mm-hmm. That'll contribute, obviously, to less greenhouse gas-related warming.
Right. And so when we talk about CO2, that's really the carbon dioxide compound that's related, as you say, to global warming.
Yep.
And so reducing the CO2 in the atmosphere by any way we can is pretty clearly a benefit to us in terms of breathable air.
Yeah, we're adding less to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's you got to kind of be pragmatic with some of these things and kind of realize things such as wind and solar, which really don't contribute to greenhouse gases. The problem with them is they tend not to be very reliable. Mm-hmm. If the sun's not shining, if the wind's mm-hmm. not blowing, you're not getting power. Now, mm-hmm. if we see technology advance to a level where battery technology comes along so you can store that energy, mm-hmm. wind and solar may become a lot more viable.
We did a show about 2 months ago with somebody from our company, Mr. Bush, down in Austin, and we mm-hmm. talked about the smart meters and the smart grid. And, the development of that's going to have everything to do with that, along with the large rechargeable batteries, to being yep. able to store that power and have it more consistent, you know, in the system. But until then, you know, we have to work with what we've got. Now, can right. you just talk about the basics of natural gas a little bit? What are we talking about here? Dry versus liquid, for example.
Sure, sure. What you have is that actually natural gas, when it's pulled out of the ground, is really a mixture of several different elements. you have there's usually a lot of oil mixed in with the natural gas. That's refined out. Next, there's quite a bit of water mixed in with it, which in the next step of the refining process, that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
There are contaminants of various sorts. They take some of the CO2 out during the refining process. And then there's a lot of nitrogen as well. That can be recycled into fertilizers, but is also there. Once you get the nitrogen out, you can isolate the dry gas. It's methane. And that's usually what you associate with natural gas.
Okay, that's
so methane. That's what runs your stove, your furnace.
Right, right. Now, how is propane related to that?
Well, propane is a natural gas liquid. So once you've taken out the dry gas, the methane, it's mainly the natural gas liquids that are left, ethane, propane, butane, the liquid natural gases.
Mm-hmm. So there must be some advantage over oil. I mean, we talked about the burning part, right? It burns a lot cleaner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does quite a bit, and at a lower CO2 cost as well. In some areas it's very easy to get to the natural gas. All you have to do is pretty much put up a mechanical oil well that doesn't throw off a lot of pollution. You throw it into a pipeline and you transport it. You must transport it by pipeline. You cannot transport it by truck or train or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, that's a little less of a pollutive signature, but at the same time, you have to build some pretty significant infrastructure to do that. There are some negatives, though, with natural gas when it comes to the quote-unquote green aspect of it. Some natural gas operations, especially those in the tight gas or the shale operations, do take a lot of energy to get out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process called fracking, where you essentially make an explosion to loosen out the natural gas. And there have been some areas where it's been accused, at least on a localized basis. You've seen some pollution to the water supply of the for their surrounding residents.
Right. Now, when we talked about gold mining back in March, or we talked about gold with Stephen Walker from RBC Capital Markets up in Toronto, and we talked about gold along the same lines as natural gas. You know, really, is it a socially responsible investment? Well, that's not even a good question. Gold, natural gas, oil for that matter, water, these are commodities. What we really talk about as far as the socially responsible side of this has to do with the way it's used, the way it's mined, how it's used in production. And back when we talked about gold, one of the things about gold mining was that it's a really incredibly destructive process of mining, especially the chemicals that are used to refine the gold. That makes it very expensive to manage. Now, how is that related to shale? It seems to me like shale has received a tremendous amount of criticism because of the huge amount of water that's used for the mining.
Yeah, there's a lot of water used, and that's just one of the elements in the fracking liquid. It has various other elements, some of which are likely toxic. And that has, again, at least in localized areas, affected residential water supplies. Where the debate lies to a greater degree is it going to affect major water reservoirs? The oil companies and gas companies that are doing these operations claim that, you know, they're a safe distance away from the major water supplies, those that feed New York, those that feed Pennsylvania, where a lot of this, the Marcellus Shale, has the, is really the geography where this is the biggest controversy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really something that's caught up in environmental politics right now. Currently in Pennsylvania, there is a suggestion that they have a moratorium on Marcellus fracking. It hasn't happened yet. It's just been a proposal at this point in time. And in our assessment, unlikely to pass. But if you do have one accident, if you have public opinion switch, and there's an HBO documentary on right now called Gasland that discusses some of these pollutive issues in the Marcellus area, if those start to swing public opinion, it's possible that you could see some curtailing of those type operations, or some precautions taken that cost these natural gas companies more money and make the gathering of gas less profitable, and at the same time making the price of natural gas higher for the consumer, you and I.
Right. So really, as I say, you know, we're looking at the sustainable issue. This has to do with the company that's actually doing the oil and gas production. And we talked about, you and I talked about off the air, we talked about ExxonMobil and their purchase of a big company, natural gas company, last year, and the huge installation going in. We'll talk about this in the fourth segment of a natural gas institution, really, in Qatar. That'll be the largest in the world when it's up and running. So, I mean, there's ways to get to natural gas without doing the shale necessarily, and I think that is an issue. And I can't say, sitting here, that a person should just, with a socially responsible investing attitude, just naturally say, well, we'll just take the shale with the regular production. That's going to be some hair splitting for some people.
Yeah, it's tough though in a way, because you mentioned Qatar. Over in the Mideast, you still have a lot of natural gas that is fairly easy to get to, and you don't have to bother the environment as much. Right. Obviously, you still need to build the pipelines and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The problem here is that we don't have as much that's easy to get to. And natural gas, for the most part, at least at this price, $4.40 per 1,000 cubic feet,
mm-hmm.
At this price, it's not very economic to make that portable outside the borders of the country.
Mm-hmm.
You have natural gas liquefaction, which is essentially compressing the natural gas into a liquid form. It takes up about 1/600th of the volume that it does in its natural gas form. You put it on a tanker ship and you ship it just like you would oil. At $4.40 here in the U.S., though, it's not very practical to take that Qatar natural gas and ship it to the U.S. What you'd more likely do is compress it, liquefy it, put it on a ship, and ship it out to Japan or South Korea.
Well, listen, Dan, we got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk also about coal and how that's used in power plants. And we'll be back in just a minute. Mike Mullins here, financial consultant with RBC Wealth Management. Are you hoping for a comfortable retirement? Are you worried that you may not be able to afford one? Do you want to know if you're headed in the right direction so you can afford a comfortable retirement? We need to have a visit. I have created a very focused strategy and technique, wealth building to wealth spending, the story of your life. My approach can help you ensure that you are on the right track. Call me, Mike Mullins, at 612-371-7859. That's 612-371-7859 for a free one-page summary of my strategy, Wealth Building to Wealth Spending, the Story of Your Life. You can also email your request to michael.w.mullins, M-U-L-L-I-N-S, at rbc.com. Together, we can create peace of mind for you and your household. Call today. RBC Wealth Management is a division of RBC Capital Markets, member NYSC, FINRA, SIPC. Welcome back. Part two of the Socially Responsible Investing Show. I'm your host, Mike Mullins. And today our guest is Dan Smith, CFA, Vice President, Portfolio Analyst for RBC Wealth Management. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. In the first segment, we talked about some of the benefits of natural gas, some of the advantages over oil, and we just ended up talking about kind of a controversial aspect of the energy production business, which is shale. Some people may not know what we're talking about. The word is S-H-A-L-E, and it has to do with the fact that the rocks in shale have a lot of content of oil and natural gas embedded in them, and mining the shale for this energy source has become very important to many oil companies' productions. What can you tell me about that, Dan?
Well, you're absolutely right, Mike. Shale's a fairly hard rock, at least compared to what you usually find oil and natural gas in. But at the same time, it can contain high concentrations of natural gas. So what happens is the oil and gas producers, rather than just essentially dipping a straw into the ground and sucking it out, they have to take another step. They have to go down and do what's called fracking, and that's essentially creating an explosion with a fluid which breaks up the rock and releases the natural gas. The natural gas at the early stages sort of comes out of the well under a tremendous amount of pressure. It's a lot like that explosion's a lot like shaking up a pop bottle and then taking off the cap. So once you've done the pressure pumping, you get a really high rate of production and your payback periods are really quick. So it can be quite profitable. It is a growing source of natural gas production. You'll see a lot more of it in the future. Right now it represents about 17 to 18% of natural production, of natural gas production here in the U.S., but it is growing as a percentage.
And why is it controversial?
Well, it's controversial because these underground explosions with these fluids, which can contain some pretty nasty stuff, have been known to allegedly get in the water supply. It's kind of hard to debate that it has gotten into some localized municipal water supplies in the immediate areas that the drilling is taking place. The biggest concern, though, is if it were to get into a more significant water table such as that that serves Philadelphia or New York City, in which case, obviously, the social and monetary costs would be massive.
So basically, those folks are averse to being poisoned. Basically,
as I think we all are.
Yes, we all are. Now you're saying Pennsylvania and New York are the primary places where this is taking place in America.
Yeah, that's where it's an area called the Marcellus Shale. In mainly western New York and eastern Pennsylvania, which has this type of formation, the shales that require a pretty significant explosion. A lot of shale gas, it doesn't matter quite as much because you're in lightly populated areas such as the Bakken Shale, which is up in North Dakota, Montana, and then also Saskatchewan. You have a lot of folks out there that obviously, and there's a couple other places in Canada where you have a lot in the way of operations but not much in the way of population, so there's less of a public outcry.
It seems to me I've heard a lot more about Canadian shale than I have American shale for some reason. I wonder why that is.
Well, there are a few different operations. Canada is a vast field of resources, whether it's natural gas, to a lesser degree coal, gold, silver, copper, etc. Half of Canada's economy, in fact, is related to natural resources, and you just have larger production of natural gas coming out of Canada. It's a larger land mass, and they just have more of these formations. Again, too, the shale it's an early stage, but the thought is that it's a little bit more productive in that the reserve life is considered to probably be longer in a couple of the larger Canadian shales.
You know, it calls to mind for me what we're dealing with the Macondo spill in the Gulf of Mexico, the BP spill, as people are, I think, talking about it. And it occurred to me that natural gas probably doesn't have the same pollutive qualities as an oil spill, so to speak, as we have going on in the Gulf. What would happen if we had a natural gas spill?
Well, for onshore natural gas, it would be in other words, that which is land drilled, it would be less of a risk, really, because it's not pouring into water; it's more easily contained. Because let's keep in mind that the Macondo oil spill, what they're trying to do is like playing the world's hardest video game. Essentially, they're going down 3-5 miles under the sea to essentially cover up a 7-inch hole.
So, small wonder
why it's not working.
Well, exactly. We have natural gas deep drilling, do we not?
Yeah, we do.
In the Gulf,
we do, and there are some risks with that as well. It's just that the natural gas is a bit less toxic than the oil that's coming out on in general basis. It's not that it would be an unserious situation. I think that the better analogy is looking at deep water versus onshore. Onshore, all in all, is a bit safer if done properly. And so what you're seeing actually a lot of is that several of the institutional investors, for instance, are sensing that deep shore drilling, whether it be for oil or natural gas, is coming down, and so they tend to be investing more in the onshore as are the oil companies do.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense, frankly, to be looking at it that way. Now, we need to turn our attention, just to start with, we've got a couple minutes left in this, about a minute and a half left in this segment, to start talking about the advantage of natural gas over coal. Again, let me remind people that are listening, why we're talking about natural gas is that when it's burned, to create power, to create energy, the emissions from natural gas, the CO2 emissions from what gets burned, is about 45 to 50% less than coal. Is that about right, Dan?
Yeah, it depends on the grade of coal.
Okay.
But, that's a good round trip.
And it's about 25% less than burning oil. When you think about the volume that gets burned, it can make a huge difference. I want to talk about that when we come back and what the possibilities are, prospects of replacing coal as the source for, they burn coal for power generation plants, right, predominantly.
Yeah, it's the number one source of electric generation here.
Right. So we want to be thinking about and ask you after we come back from this break, talking about what's involved in replacing coal with natural gas. And then we need to talk about the opportunity to invest in natural gas and what that's all about, having to do with the seasonality of demand for heating use in the winter, when is the ideal time to invest. And we'll deal with that when we come back. This is the Socially Responsible Investing Show. Don't leave. What a joy it is to listen to the music of Laura Caviani every week. LauraCaviani.com, graciously allowing us to use some of her wonderful jazz. She's a local, actually a national jazz figure and a good friend of ours. Laura, thank you very much. I also want to give a quick shout out on the Socially Responsible Investing Show to Dunn Brothers Coffee in Eden Prairie, right across from the library. Great sponsors of ours. Ken and Sharon have a wonderful shop over there, and I have done a lot of meetings and networking meetings and the like, and I will tell you that there is no better place in the Southwest area that I know of to meet people than that particular Dunn Brothers. The way it's laid out is kind of a bigger, more of a square room, plenty of comfortable seating, and you don't end up having your conversation drowned out by coffee grinders and steam machines and what have you, unlike a lot of other places that are more like a little hallway you walk into and they're loud. That's not helpful. And I also want to thank Claude Chenard, the owner of Wizard Academy in Eden Prairie, W-H-I-Z-A-R-D. Wizard Academy is a specialist when it comes to tutoring. Math and English are big topics, but really all topics. This is a great place over the summer for you to take yourself or your children, your students, and get some tutoring, sharpen things up. So when the school year starts, I don't want to tell you, it's only a few weeks away, folks, that your student will start more confident, more competent, and more able to do well in school. Now, we are talking with Dan Smith, who is the Vice President, a Vice President, and Portfolio Analyst for RBC Wealth Management. We've been talking about natural gas and other energy things, and as promised, we now need to turn our attention in the first half of this third segment to coal and versus natural gas, and then talk about investment opportunities. So, Dan, when we talk about coal being burned predominantly to produce electrical power plants, do we see natural gas being used as a substitute at all?
Yeah, it is to a large degree. It's the analogy to make is that it's really hard to shut down the production that comes from a coal plant. A coal plant is kind of always on.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see happening more and more with natural gas, or has been the case for, you know, a good 15, 20 years, is that natural gas is generally produces electricity out of smaller power plants.
Mm-hmm.
And power plants that you can switch off and on. So let's say a hot day comes along, as we're supposed to see here this weekend, and everyone turns on their air conditioner.
Right.
Well, one of the natural gas plants would then be fired up, increase the electricity coming into the grid, and prevent a brownout or a blackout.
Now, since natural gas burns only half, produces only half as much CO2 emissions into the atmosphere than coal, why couldn't we start out with the natural gas-powered power plant and supplement it with coal if when necessary?
There just wouldn't be enough to sustain that the power load that mm-hmm. That the U.S. Requires at this point in time.
So,
it's a good supplementary source.
So what's the prospect of us seeing natural gas being used more in place of coal? We'd have to build new plants to get that?
Some, yes. But the prospect, at least for natural gas use in the use of electricity production, is growing relative to coal, and a lot of that has to do with pollutive levels of coal. Most
mm-hmm.
of the really efficient, low-pollution coal has been already mined and burned. And as a result, you're starting to see some movements for environmental regulations that could take down some of the dirtier coal plants, which would most easily out of the options available be replaced by natural gas.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. By the way, the major end-use markets for natural gas, we've talked about people using natural gas in their homes, we all know that, and businesses as well, commercial buildings. And we're talking about using them for commercial purposes such as power plants and such. What are the other uses of the natural gas that we could expect to maybe see some growth and make this a more valuable commodity?
Well, there are some in transportation. If you look around the cities and you see the buses, for instance, that have the it's kind of a box on top of them, those run on natural gas.
Right, we have some of those around here. Yeah.
Yep, that's one example. Also, one thing a lot of people don't realize is natural gas is used in making a lot of end products, plastics, fertilizers, petrochemicals, things such as that, additives to additives to paint and coatings and so forth. Mm-hmm. So there are some so those are some of the other uses there.
So other than replacing coal, what are the prospects for, well, in a supply-demand world, which is where money, mm-hmm. you know, you buy something expecting, right. you're investing and you expect the value to go up, typically has to do with the balance between supply of available natural gas and the demand for natural gas.
Yes.
I know right now we're, did you say $4.60 some odd cents?
Yeah, it's $4.40 when I last
checked. And we've had a range. Seems to me like I saw we've had a range of like $2.50 up to like $15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about right.
Over the last 5 years?
That's over the last 15, 20 years.
Last 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And so, how long have we been?
Actually, you're right. Actually, a couple of years ago, we did have a natural gas shortage when the economy was booming in the 07 period. So.
Oh, there's an interesting. So, so if we, once we get into this next economic expansion, which hopefully we're on the cusp of, we would see a greater demand for natural gas. Why would that be?
Well, for one, there are some situations out there where, you know, again, we talked about the fact that that there is more in the way of environmental legislation that will take down coal. That's the most immediate one. If also it's used more in the way of in regards to transportation and so forth, going into more cars could be an alternative fuel for a car. Will more likely be for, you know, larger vehicles. That could be another one too. So those are the main things right there.
Right. Okay. And so as far as pricing goes, if we're talking about natural gas as a commodity being $4.60 per British thermal unit?
It's actually per MCFE, which is thousands of cubic feet.
Okay. That's right.
Yep.
That's a different measurement.
Yep.
What are the prospects? I mean, I think one of the incentives we had for talking about this was that this could be an investment opportunity for people to make some money with this. How would that work?
Yeah, over the longer term, that may indeed help. Right now, you know, the $4.40 current price is relatively depressed. Some companies can still make money doing that, not as much as they'd want. What you have here over the shorter term is that, you know, these shale plays we've been talking about have been producing a heck of a lot of natural gas, and so storage levels are near full capacity. One shot you have at those storage levels being worked down, and where you tend to see the price of natural gas go up, and thus the price of many gas-related equities go up, is when you start getting into the winter months. So during the fall, what will happen is a lot of investors will start to pile into these stocks as the price of natural gas goes up in anticipation of winter. Contingent with this, obviously, is that you are taking something of a bet on the weather. As it's going to come in the winter, so you know, with high storage levels, it's a bet that in general terms we think, okay, you're going to have to get a pretty darn cold winter for it to work.
Mm-hmm. So the catch 22 is if we have a warmer winter, which a lot of people would prefer, then we have natural gas prices not going up as high, which people would prefer if they were investors.
Yeah, if you're an investor, you would prefer that we had a cold winter. Obviously, if you're a consumer of natural gas, then you'd want the price to be kept nice and low. Right. A, you'd be burning less gas, and then B, the price of your heating bill would be less.
So I'm hearing two things. I'm hearing on the one hand, as a long-term investment, the price of natural gas might work its way back up.
Yeah, we think it's likely because typically on a unit per unit basis, oil had historically traded at about 8 times that of natural gas. Right now, it's at about 17 times with oil at about $75 a barrel. So I don't think we're going to get that historical ratio back together, especially over the next several years as these shale plays come out. But, you know, at the same time, could work more back towards the traditional level, maybe halfway back.
What do you think the prospects are for there to be an Obama generation, there we go, an Obama administration-led movement to really kind of force industry's hand towards natural gas?
Well, it would happen almost by default because, again, to the degree that that they'd make companies require companies to pollute less, to the degree that, again, it's cleaner than oil, it's cleaner than coal, it could be appealing to, rather than put a bunch of scrubbers on a power plant or some filters in your refinery, it might make more sense to you as a business just to switch over to natural gas to the degree that you can. And that's true for some large industries as well.
Well, and I know we already have a large amount of subsidies involved with anything having to do with fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we probably don't have all that much wiggle room to add more incentives to natural gas use. But I can imagine there might be a way to place some penalties on the other side that can
it's
make
possible.
It more expensive.
Yeah, usually those take place quite gradually. When you look at going from steam coal to oil, for instance, when you do a major shift in fuel source as a predominant source, right now you say coal and oil are the predominant sources, to switch over to, natural gas would really be just a transitory thing.
Yeah.
I think maybe over, because it usually takes about 75 years to go from one source to another.
Wow.
So what I'd envision is you're looking at a situation where you're going from coal, oil, then to natural gas, and then perhaps the battery technology is sufficient to use more renewable sources.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, that had a lot to do with my wondering if this would be a good topic to talk about, because, I mean, there's a lot of ambivalence right now with the oil spill about doing anything with oil and gas. But, that's sort of like cutting off your nose to spite your face. The fact is we have a fossil fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to go away, as you say, 75-year transition, that's historical. I mean, it could be shorter than that, but it isn't going to be in the next two or three. We know that for a fact.
Right.
So natural gas as a way to invest in the energy production sector, I think I would recommend to people, rather than just buy an energy sector, exchange-traded fund, let's say, I might be more interested in also having some additional investment into the natural gas. But as a seasonal thing, the better time to be looking at buying this with the opportunity for the price to go higher would likely be sometime in the next two or three months?
Yeah, generally speaking, late summer and the fall is the time that you'll tend to see traders start to flow into the stocks, and there's often a good buying opportunity at that time of year.
And then if you were going to do this as a short-term investment, let's say inside an IRA where you don't have tax consequences that are current, when would you think the time would be typically to get out of that investment?
The seasonal trade typically ends in the April to May time frame.
Okay. Now, I'm going to talk in this next segment about some investment strategies involving this. So, what I just said about the timing of this is important. I don't want to give people the idea that we recommend that you trade in and out of things just due to seasonality. But there's no doubt that there are, better times than some other times to get in and out. And this is one of those opportunities, I think. And last question, Dan. There are some good dividend-paying natural gas companies, are there not?
Sure. Yeah, the ones that tend to pay the most dividends are on the pipelining and distribution end of things. You can get, dividend yields anywhere from 5 to 6%. And obviously, a financial advisor such as yourself could tell clients where best to do that.
All right. And I need to tell people I cannot give the names of recommendations on the air. The FINRA regulations ban that. It's a disadvantage for me. I can't really talk about the cool stuff here on the air. You got to talk to me. You got to call me. And I'll look forward to talking to you. Dan, thank you so much for all this great conversation and information. And Dan Smith is a vice president and portfolio analyst with RBC Wealth Management here in Minneapolis. And if you have questions for Dan, you can certainly get that conversation going through me. And we'll be back. This is Mike Mullins, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show. Don't go away. Mike Mullins here, financial consultant with RBC Wealth Management. Are you hoping for a comfortable retirement? Are you worried that you may not be able to afford one? Do you want to know if you're headed in the right direction so you can afford a comfortable retirement? Well, we need to have a visit. I have created a very focused strategy and technique, Wealth Building to Wealth Spending, the story of your life. My approach can help you ensure that you are on the right track. Call me, Mike Mullins, at 612-371-7859. That's 612-371-7859 for a free one-page summary of my strategy, Wealth Building to Wealth Spending, the story of your life. You can also email your request to michael.w.mullins, M-U-L-L-I-N-S, at rbc.com. Together, we can create peace of mind for you and your household. Call today. RBC Wealth Management is a division of RBC Capital Markets, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC. Welcome back to the last segment of the Socially Responsible Investing Show for this Saturday. Our topic today is natural gas. It's one of those topics that's frankly kind of a little muddy to talk about. We've had such clean themes for the last several months. They've been very simple. This one's a little bit more difficult because, as you know, if you've been listening to the show so far, there's some real issues here. There are issues about what has to happen in order to do the mining to get gas and oil from shale. We're talking about explosions. We're talking about chemicals being used. And although it may not be as toxic as other kinds of mining, such as gold mining, the fact is, it seems like you need to ask the question, if we can just basically drill a hole in the ground and have the oil, the pressure of that well, just kind of push the oil up and harvest it that way, if we're going to harvest it at all, why not do it that way? Seems a lot simpler. Well, you know, as Dan Smith, the analyst, was talking about this, it seems that there's a higher concentration of oil and gas in the shale. They can get it out with higher pressure so that the financial payback in terms of the volume they can extract is quicker. So there's financial considerations there. There's a lot of times in our economy that financial considerations drive, I shouldn't say a lot of times, most of the time, financial considerations drive decisions about what to do about those things, and they don't sometimes take into account the impact. You'll recall the first Earth Day back in 1970 was built around environmental concerns. We had toxic waste dump sites all over the country, and this is the U.S. There was even worse overseas that took the Superfund, if anybody remembers that. Gosh, just enormous amounts of money that had to go in and basically dig up these 55-gallon drums filled with toxic chemicals that they just buried. There weren't any regulations governing this. And, of course, now over this last generation, there's been a lot more regulation on that. But still, it crops up every once in a while when you ask the question in the face of a BP oil spill in the Gulf, do we really need to do this? Well, gosh darn it, the answer is actually yes. We have an economy that's built on fossil fuels, and it is not going to be able to be converted to wind and solar and geothermal and alternatives to fossil fuel overnight. We have to really make a concerted effort and provide a lot of incentives to business to do this, because sometimes you get the feeling that some businesses don't make the right decision about these things from a much broader point of view of social good and that kind of thing. Now, we do like to look for companies that have a good sense of responsibility, that are good stewards of their resources, good stewards in four areas, the good stewards towards their employees, good stewards toward their customers, consumers, clients, good stewards when it comes to environmental issues, and good stewards when it comes to governance and community issues. These are very important aspects of being a responsible company. And you just wonder if sometimes these things don't fly in the face of the profit motive. And I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat, these are real issues because the decisions these companies make impact communities. As Dan was saying, if you have a situation where there's a potential for toxic chemicals that are being used in some process to extract the oil and gas from the shale, has the chance to get into the water table of New York and Pennsylvania, boy, you sure have to ask some hard questions about that. And we need to do that. But nonetheless, for people who are looking for a way to invest in energy, portfolio managers, generally speaking, don't like to not have energy. It's one of the ten sectors in the stock market, and energy is certainly one. Other things like industrial and utilities and telecommunications and technology, those are some other sectors. But, you know, I've got a note here from one of our analysts here. It says, the administration has to think more about incentivizing use of clean, available, domestic natural gas. Given the identification of massive shale resources in recent years and the combination of the oil spill and the Massey coal mine incident, you might remember that from a couple of months ago, it should further shine a light on natural gas. Also, gas is much cheaper than oil, and it's even cheaper than coal. In fact, gas is cheaper than coal all the way out the five-year curve where you're looking at use and the demand. And it's very unusual on an historic basis where a lot of times coal has been cheaper. Policy decisions could lead to consumer incentives to use gas through a potential energy bill, and industrial and power users have to be thinking about gas given its wider availability. Obviously, gas demand trends may not change for several years in a major way, as we've been talking about, but a better long-term outlook enables investors to put higher multiples on near-term cash flows, a technical term for imagining that there's going to be a higher price for natural gas more quickly than there's been in the recent period of time. Now, if you're an investor and you're thinking about what the big boys are doing, the portfolio managers that are running hundreds of millions and billions of dollars in mutual funds and institutional funds and such, from a stock market viewpoint, nearly every portfolio manager had a very deep water heavy portfolio. That's the deep water drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. Likewise, with investors shifting out of deep water related stock names, they need a place to go. And we think this is causing a shift to onshore related stocks. And we would suggest that onshore gas names as well as onshore oil names, and I can't mention these names, will benefit in a significant way. Now, right now, natural gas provides between 20 and 24% of oil, of U.S. production. And that's going to be growing. And I think that that's an important thing for you to know. Now, ways to invest in the natural gas industry, whether you're in it for a short term or long term, I would suggest, I know for a fact, that there are several exchange traded funds that focus on that industry group within the energy sector that would be good places to go, good ways to control your investment. You can see exactly what's in your portfolio any day. All you have to do is go online, look it up, and you can put a stop loss on this. So if you buy the thing at a certain price, you can set a sell price, a standing sell price below that price. That means that you are quantifying how much capital risk you're taking. In other words, you can only lose so much if the thing goes down. You're never going to go to zero because you get out. Well, these are technical investing things that I use a lot with my clients, and I would really welcome the chance to have a visit with you, talk to you about your existing portfolio. I will give you a free, no-strings-attached analysis of what you're currently doing. I will ask you questions about your goals, where you need to go, and how you're getting there, and help you make the adjustments you need to have a portfolio that you can sleep well at night with that will give you peace of mind for your family. Give me a call at 612-371-7859 or go online and look at my website. It's michaelwmullins.com. Thanks for listening today, and this has been the Socially Responsible Investing Show. I'm your host, Mike Mullins. Next week, we're going to be talking about wills and how important it is to have a will when you're planning your investments. Thank you. We'll see you.